All right, welcome back into the JoeBucksFan.com radio network. Here on your favorite website, JoeBucksFan.com, of course. I'm Steve Isbitz alongside Lee DeCamper and Steve White, the former Buccaneers defensive end. 6 years here. We need a nickname for you, Steve. I'm going to come up with one if you don't give me one. So,
hey,
one of these days.
Knock yourself out.
The coach.
I can't think of anything.
I can't help you with that one, you know. I can't help you with that.
Oh, well, we won't call you Raheem the Dream or anything like that.
Yeah, that won't work out.
Not a stupid one. We are here talking, of course, all things Buccaneers and why mess around. We've got joining us today Tampa Tribune beat writer, TBO.com, the god of Tampa Bay media Buccaneers coverage, Woody Cummings. Welcome, Roy.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Steve White, how you been, man? Been a long time since I talked to you.
Yeah, it's been a long time. How you doing, Roy?
I'm doing real well, pal. Good to see you back on our side. You came over to the dark side.
The dark side. I don't know how I ended up here. I just kind of woke up one morning, and there I was talking like Darth Vader.
All the good guys find their way over to the dark side sooner or later.
Sooner or later.
Hey, Roy, I'd like to. This is Lee. How's it going, man?
Good, Lee. How you been, man?
Hey, can't complain. Why don't you talk about an article you posted this morning on TBO.com? And you kind of told me about this earlier this year when we were talking up in the press box at the Sits, that you said you could have proof that the Glazers aren't cheap. And I know that's the general belief, the popular belief with the fans, the Glazers are cheap. And kind of what you wrote today sort of reinforced what Charlie Casserly's been saying on NFL radio recently. There's been a shift change, so to speak, in the NFL where people are going more toward build through the draft like the Steelers have, et cetera, rather than doing what the Redskins and the Cowboys have in recent history been doing. Why don't you explain that about the teams and lack of signings and things of that nature that you wrote about today?
Well, it's pretty simple, really. I mean, what it basically starts with the pool of talent that's out there right now. There really isn't a whole lot of exceptional talent available on the free agent market right now. There are probably five or six guys that were worthy of big contracts, and then obviously they've all been signed. I think now with Antonio Bryant being signed by the Bengals today. But you know what most teams are looking at, I know for a fact the Bucs are looking at it this way, is a year from now there's going to be 400 or 500 free agents out there, as opposed to about 170 that are out there now. And you know, for a fact, I mean, the 212 or so free agents that are restricted free agents right now, if everything falls the way the league thinks it will and the owners think it will, those guys are all going to be unrestricted free agents next year, and that talent pool is going to be very deep. And that's the talent pool I think most people want to, you know, dive into. Certainly it's the one the Bucs want to dive into, because why would you spend money now, say, on a 30-year-old defensive end like Julius Peppers? Granted, he can be a good one, and he is a good one. But if you could get a player similar to that who's 27 years old, still got some upside next year for maybe even a little bit less money. And so that's how teams are looking at it right now. They're basically looking at the two pools and saying, look, this year's pool isn't that great. Next year's pool is going to be a lot deeper. That's the pool to really, you know, draw from if you're looking to do anything in free agency. And I know for a fact that that's what the Bucs are doing.
And that's sort of that sounds like very similar, like the Bucs wanted to stock up on draft picks because this draft is so deep. They similar philosophy. Next year's restricted free agents is going to be a lot deeper. So that's when you're going to splurge.
Yeah, exactly. And the other part of the coin, you know, the other side of the coin, as you just said, is, you know, this draft, I mean, Mark Domenech, I think you got to give him credit. He kind of looked ahead at the landscape of the NFL, knowing that it was going to be a year when they're probably going to be an uncapped year there. They weren't going to get the collective bargaining agreement done. A lot of juniors were going to come out fearful of what might be or what might not be in 2011. So he knew, he had a pretty strong feeling that this year's draft was going to be very deep. It was going to be, you know, really heavy laden with juniors. And he wanted to have a lot of picks on that one. So he made a point of making sure that he had a few extra picks this year and that he held on to his top picks, his first and his second round picks. And so, you know, he was in good shape for the draft this year. So things are really falling. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, the Bucs don't have a plan. Well, they do have a plan. It may not be, you know, the plan that everybody wants, because so many people want instant gratification. Look, it ain't going to happen, folks. I hate to break it to you yet again, but, you know, I can tell you for a fact that 2009 was not about 2009, and 2010 is not really about 2010. They're all about 2011 and beyond, really. I mean, the Bucs are hoping that they're going to be a competitive team next year, but the chances are they're going to win 6 or 7 games, and they'll look at that and say, hey, you know what, that's progress, and that's what you need. They're really looking towards 2011, 2012. What they're trying to build, as Raheem Morris told me, during a coffee break at the combine is long-term success. And Steve, I know you know this. The way you do that is you build through the draft, you bring in young players through free agency, not 35-year-olds, not 32-year-olds. You bring in guys who can be here for 6, 7, 8 years, if not longer, and you have to be patient at the beginning and hope that it works out in the end.
I totally agree with you on that philosophy. I think that along with the Steelers, I think actually the Colts have been a model of that.
Yes.
Recently. You know, you don't really see them signing any free agents, and then every year they're winning 12, 13, 14 games a year during the regular season. So I'm totally with you on that. I think the biggest problem, honestly, is the Bucs have a PR problem, to be honest with you. I think their messaging is just off. I think if they were ever to come to the fans and really explain to them, kind of like what your column did today, what they're doing, then fans will be a little bit more understanding. But I last year, to be honest with you, I don't think that their message really came forth, that they were really rebuilding, that they were starting over from scratch, and then they're going to build for the long haul. I think that people kind of heard what they wanted to hear, and they were able to because the messaging was so bad, in my honest opinion. And so you had some people who are realistic like myself. I mean, I'm looking at the talent that we had going into the season, and I'm like, there's no way we're going to win a lot of games. But as fans, obviously fans always want the team to win the Super Bowl every year. You know, they're not the most realistic people in the world. So sometimes in order to really get them to where they're understanding and still supporting the team and still coming to the games, which is really the biggest issue right now, you have to be a little bit better with your messaging so they know we're all in this together. Hey, we're going to go down for a while, but then we're going to come up and we're going to stay going up instead of doing like we did right around the end of my time here, where we sign all these free agents, get all these contracts that are unwieldy, and then all of a sudden, you know, we're stuck under the salary cap and we can't move, we can't do the things we want to do. And so we have one Super Bowl, and then we have a couple years where we only win 3 or 4 or 5 games. So I think that I definitely am behind them on their approach. I think it's exactly the way to go now, building through the draft, only adding maybe 1 or 2 free agents here or there to help the team. But you got to get the fans on board, too, because we really don't want to end up being like Jacksonville this year where half your games are blacked out.
Yeah, you know what, Steve? I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's always kind of been one of the real failures of the Glazer family is that they just – you know, they are available in the public. They're out there. You can see them. You can touch them. But you know what? You just can't get them to say much. And I think you're absolutely right on this, Mark, because if all they did was come out and explain, hey, this is our philosophy. We do want to win. We just feel that after having done it, you know, the Rich McKay way and having done it the Bruce Allen way, we've decided that, you know what, the Rich McKay way is the better way. We're going to go with the long-term approach. We're going to build through the draft instead of turning the roster over every other year and going with, you know, aging veterans. We're going to go with kids and try to build a team that wins for you every year. It's going to be lean times for a couple of years. Yeah, if they came out with that message and went straight to the public with it, either through the media or even better, if they just held like a town hall meeting type situation. You know, the Lightning have done that a couple times with their ownership. It's always worked out well. I mean, I think a year ago when the Bucks fired John Gruden, you know, Joel Glazer through the media, I think he did a good job of explaining what it was that they didn't like about John Gruden and Bruce Allen, why they felt change was necessary at this time. You know, and I think the message got out and people were okay, like, all right, you know, I don't necessarily have to agree with it, but now I at least know what they were thinking. They didn't like the fact that John wouldn't develop a young quarterback, that he wouldn't build through the draft, things like that. We're now seeing those things happen with Raheem Morris and Mark Dominic. But people have kind of forgotten that, hey, that's the approach that these guys chose. If they came back and spoke to the fans and said, hey, this is what we want to do, I think they'd get a lot of points for it in the public, you know, in the court of public opinion, and I think it would help them a lot. It would, you know, stop some of this ridiculous conjecture that these guys are cheap, that they don't have any money, that they don't care about winning. I mean, in my opinion, and it's basically my opinion, although, I mean, I do speak to the Glazers now and then. I know what their approach is. I know what they're looking for. A, they're not cheap. B, they want to win. And C, it tears them apart to see the team the way it is, but they know this is something that's got to happen in order to get back to where they want to be, which is a team that's in the mix for that Super Bowl every year. They're not going to be in it last year, obviously, probably not going to be in it this year, but by 2011 and beyond, they hope to be there. And in order to do that, you just got to take some of these steps, and sometimes it means taking a step backwards.
We're talking to Roy Cummings, a beat writer for the Tampa Tribune, TBO.com. Roy, Steve Isbitt's here. I got two sort of follow-up questions for you. And but first I want to throw out there that as far as what you were talking about, Steve White, with the PR campaign and getting it out there, imagine if the Glazers and the Bucks had gone out there with this kind of PR campaign we're talking about last year, this town hall kind of format, explained what they were doing, asked for the buy-in like that, and then went out and fired Jim Bates and Jeff Jagodzinski and said, hey, we're blowing up the whole thing. It would have been worse than it is now. And if
I'm going to disagree with you on that. And I'll say this is the reason. I apologize for interrupting you, but
no,
I'm
going to
disagree,
man.
Because I still think, and you guys may all disagree with me, and maybe a lot of people do, but I think what the Bucks did that was different than a lot of teams is when they realized they made a mistake, they addressed it immediately instead of waiting. I give them credit for realizing. You know, I don't give them credit, and I think it was horrible that in the interview process they decided on Jim Bates and Jeff Jagodzinski, and then realized rather almost immediately in both cases, to be honest with you, that they'd made a mistake. Those are mistakes that can't really happen, continually if these guys are going to work. But I do give them credit for realizing at the point that they made the mistake or realized they made a mistake, that they changed it and said, all right, look, there's no sense in going on any further with this. We're not going to win this year anyway, so let's get the guy in here that we think is going to be right for this offense, for this defense, and let's start moving forward. I think they're ahead of the curve now, especially on defense, because of that, and probably a little bit on offense, although with the offense is a little bit more difficult because they're just going to have to spend this whole offseason with, you know, learning Greg Olsen's scheme because he's going to really get his involved now. I mean, poor Greg. I mean, the guy had to, you know, he really kind of had to run Jeff Jagodzinski's offense and try to, you know, little by little squeeze some of his, you know, philosophies in there, and it really didn't happen. But, you know, so we're going to see more of what he really wanted to do this coming season. But at least with the defense, you know, they went to that hybrid scheme with the Tampa 2 as the kind of the base that Raheem wanted from the start. He didn't get it from Jim Bates, and you know, I give him credit for figuring these things out. The reason I say that is because one of the key things about last year was finding out who on the roster of these young players could actually play in the schemes that they want to run. And I think without making those adjustments last year, as much as it set them back, I think they'd be back even further than they are now had they not found out that, you know, this player, that player, and this player can all play in this scheme, and these two guys or these three guys can't. I think that's important that they were able to do that. So I apologize for interrupting, but I just felt like I disagree with that.
No problem. I mean, they're definitely ahead of the curve from where they were. I mean, I believe they are leaps and bounds ahead. I don't know. It's just when you're talking with the fans and asking the fans to get it, it's a tough road to get the buy-in when you're not winning and people are seeing a different kind of product. But to follow up on free agency, when you basically said the Bucks have a plan and they're targeting 2011 free agents for this big hot pool of guys that's going to be out there, where do you think the Bucks are going to go then in 2011? Who are they looking at, or what positions are they looking at?
Oh, it's way too early to know. I mean, you won't know that until A, the draft happens this year, and you find out what you get. If you get a defensive tackle, which it's starting to look like they're going to get one. If you get a safety, which they can still get, if they don't get Eric Berry, you can still get a good safety in this draft in the second or third round, maybe even the fourth round. If they don't get a defensive end, I mean, it depends on what's still missing. I mean, I think looking ahead, kind of, you know, trying to project what they do want in the draft this year, I think by next year you're probably starting to look at a running back because Derek Ward's going to be over 30. Ernest Graham's going to be over 30. Cadillac Williams, you know, you just don't know about the knees. I think a running back is going to be a key element for them this time next year, probably another receiver. They're always going to want to get a cornerback. If they don't get a corner this year, which they will get one. They'll certainly make a run at it. They always do. Steve, White, you know this. I mean, it's always part of their draft philosophy to pick up a corner somewhere, be it late in the draft or even in, you know, undrafted free agents. They'll get one. But if by next year they don't have Rondae Barber's replacement on the field or on the roster, they're certainly going to go after that. So I think you're probably looking at cornerback, running back, probably maybe a linebacker. Depends on how those guys work out. But certainly probably another defensive end of some kind. It depends on if Kyle Moore can make it or if Tim Crowder, some of these other young guys that they've brought in. But, you know, I think running back, cornerback are probably going to be the top two needs going into 2011, so that's what they'll be looking for.
Hey, Roy, Steve again. I'm just wondering, I know that you do talk to the Glazers for now, every now and then, and obviously Coach Morris had a two-year deal that he signed initially as a head coach. And so that's going to kind of make him a lame duck going into this season. And obviously we have the potential lockout coming up too. Have you talked any or heard anything about when they might actually extend that contract? Should he start the season off well and it looks like things are going in the right direction? Is there any talk of maybe trying to extend that contract in the middle of the season? Or is this something they're simply going to wait and address after the season next year?
Well, one thing you got to keep in mind about Raheem's contract is the Bucks hold an option for the third year, so
okay.
There is an option that they can easily pick up for 2011. But still, you're right. I mean, they're going to have to start looking at some kind of an extension. But you know what? And Steve, you know the Glazers very well. They are very methodical. They take their time with everything. I can almost guarantee you that what they'll do is they'll wait until, you know, all of 2010 is done. They'll use that whole season as the measuring stick to see if they really want to go forward with Raheem, and then they'll probably spend the off season again and see, you know, how he goes, you know, how he and Mark work in terms of building the team from where it is. I mean, if they have another 3-13 season and they're not competitive, it's going to be hard to keep Raheem around. But I think what the Bucks are expecting, and by when I say the Bucks, I mean ownership, I think they're expecting this team to win 5, 6, 7 games next year, or at least be in a position to win 6, 7, or 8 games. And, again, that pendulum's got to be moving on the uptick. And if it is, they're probably going to feel good enough to go with Raheem into year three of the contract. They'll pick up the option, and then they'll worry about that, probably early in that third year, because I think they're going to have to hold him accountable. Unlike a veteran coach, if it was Mike Shanahan, I mean, you know what you're going to get out of him. Whereas with Raheem, they're probably going to want to hold him accountable a little bit. So it may go into the beginning of the 2011 season. He may go into the start of that season as a lame duck and have to earn his extension. That's a possibility. A lot depends, though, on next year. That's a question we can definitely answer after next season.
You're listening to Roy Cummings, the preeminent Bucks beat writer for Tampa Tribune, TBO.com, and periodically WFLA TV Channel 8. I figured I better throw that in there for you, Roy.
I appreciate it.
No problem. Here's one for you. We get some comments from some of our readers, JoeBucksFan.com. And by the way, you're listening to JoeBucksFan.com Radio Network. Some of our commenters, and I think it's a valid point, when the Bucks talk about, okay, we're building for the draft, we're building through the draft, and there's a lot, obviously they have a lot of draft picks stocked up for this year. Generally, it's the same cast of characters that are scouting and picking the players as under Bruce Allen. So some fans, they're like, why should I feel comfortable? These are the same guys that picked the bad Dexter Jackson. And so has there been a philosophy change at all at One Buck Place? Or, why should fans think, well, they're going to draft better now because they have a lot of draft picks, when 2 years ago it wasn't the case?
Well, number one, there has been a philosophy change, and the philosophy change is in two places, at the general manager position and at the head coaching position. It is the same group of scouts, but it's not the same people picking the talent. When Bruce Allen and John Gruden were running this team, John Gruden pretty much ran the draft. Bruce made the call, but he was being pushed and his hand was being forced by John Gruden. It's different now. Mark Domenech, who I personally believe is one of the brighter young minds in the game of football, in the National Football League, he's the one making most of the calls now. But they've also changed. Not only has that changed, but Mark has completely changed the way they go about just evaluating players and who's involved in the evaluation process. They've got the coaches a lot more involved now. They really hit these scouts a little bit harder now with questions about why they project them at this point, what they like about them. They're sending these guys back 2 and 3 times to look at tape and say, well, tell me about this and get me this part on the guy. I think they're getting a lot deeper, and they've done a lot of things technically and just on the basics of how you evaluate a player. that have changed the way they go about drafting. And there's no question. I mean, Mark Domenech came out and said it earlier in the offseason. He pretty much put all of his scouts on notice saying, look, this is the most important draft we have. Now, you know, these guys are all under contract until after the draft, unfortunately. But, you know, it's going to be too late then if they made a mistake. But I think that's one of the reasons that Mark is really pushing these guys a lot more this year and, you know, to get the answers that they need. And so really the whole philosophy has changed in terms of how they go about picking players. I think they're evaluating them in a much different way. I think they're being far more detailed in that evaluation process, and the people picking are completely different. And I think, in my opinion, I think they're more talented in terms of how they pick players.
I got a follow-up question for you on that. And pardon me if I'm putting words in your mouth, and I'm not trying to, but it almost sounds like the way you described the drafts under Chucky, that he would just pull up Mel Kiper stuff on ESPN.com or Mike Mayock and go from that. It didn't sound like he was there very thorough.
No, it wasn't that simple. No,
okay.
No, it wasn't like that.
Okay.
But, you know, but John had, he was in charge of that, you know, and they did their homework. There's no question. They did their homework, but, you know, I mean, they were a little bit more, you know, there's really two philosophies when it comes to drafting players. You know, some guys are measurable guys. They're combine guys, you know, and then there's people like Tony Dungy and Rich McKay and Mark Domenech, who are guys who believe in tape. They don't really care what you did at the combine as much as they want to see that you were successful on tape in college against big-time talent, and that's where they really measure your worth. And that's what the Bucs have again now. It was a little bit more the other way with John Gruden and Bruce Allen. They weren't as much tape guys as they were combine and measurable guys. That's why a guy like Dexter Jackson gets picked in the second round. I mean, you know, somebody had, you know, fell in love with Dexter Jackson, and they made the pick. And there's a lot of examples like that over the last few years where they just fell in love with a guy for one reason or another. And, you know, I would say they probably just didn't go to that nth degree on their due diligence. Now, I think the Bucs now are a little bit better at it. I think Mark Domenech just studies a little bit more, studies a little bit harder. I think it's where his strength is, whereas I don't think that was a strength of either John Gruden or Bruce Allen. I think I always argued that during the Allen-Gruden regime, what they needed was a middleman, someone who was a true expert on talent, who had the power to say no to John and to Bruce and say, this is the better choice. And I don't think they need that now, because I think Mark Domenech is objective enough. And I think he'll listen to his scouts, and I think he'll listen to his coaches when they say, no, I don't like this guy because of that reason, we can't take him. Now, when, you know, push comes to shove, Mark's going to make the call. But in the old days, when push came to shove, John made the call. And you know what? I think John was a better coach than he was a talent evaluator.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, well, let's hope that that Dexter Jackson scout is now living in a small cave in the Dominican Republic or something
like that.
There was
another guy, too. Wasn't there like a third-round wide receiver while Chucky was here?
That was a second-round wide receiver.
No, not Dexter Jackson. I'm talking about before that. Everybody talks about Dexter Jackson, but there was I can't remember
not
who the
Stall
kid was. No, this was a third-round receiver that we had that lasted maybe a year.
Marquise Douglas.
There you go. It was like when he first
Walker.
Got
was it Marquise Walker
or something like that when he
yes.
first got here. And he might have been worse.
Wow. Yeah. The guy from Michigan, right?
You. Hey, guys, I'm not going to go through the list right now, but give me an hour and I'll go back through, you know, my notes, and I can give you five or six players. You know, who the Bucks were. Well, Marcus Douglas was one of them. Not Marcus Douglas, but the poor guy who died in the boat accident, the former Buccaneer. I mean, somebody stood up on a table and said, we got to have this guy. I'm not going to say who it was, but he wasn't a coach, and he wasn't a scout, and he wasn't a GM. But, you know, just talked them into taking that poor guy. And he just, you know, he wasn't a great NFL player. He was a nice role player, maybe a special teams guy. But, you know, he wasn't worthy of the draft pick that the Bucs spent on him. And there were a lot of instances like that, you know, where they took guys that just didn't measure up to the draft spot that they were taking in.
Roy, to shift gears on you a little bit, when you look at Michael Clayton and the situation where the Bucs are now at receiver, do you think Clayton is going to be the kind of situation like Byron Leftwich was last year, where they threw him out there as a starter, hoped for lightning in the bottle to catch some fire with the guy? And is Clayton the kind of guy that where they're going to give him a full shot again, put him out there as a starter, and then just pull the plug if he's Michael Clayton of the past few years? What are they going to do with him? How are they going to approach Michael Clayton?
Well, they're going to give him every opportunity to make this football team, but I think right now his chances of making this team are about 50-50. They are prepared to pull the plug on Michael Clayton, and I think pull it early. By early, I mean maybe even pre-training camp. I think if a lot's going to depend on how he comes back to the off-season workout program, and if he is in shape and ready to go and working hard the way they need him to, he'll make it to training camp, and then he'll have to do it all over again. And then he's going to have to do it every Sunday because, I don't want to say that they're fed up with Michael, but they've seen enough. They know right now what they need out of Michael Clayton and what they can get out of Michael Clayton. And if they don't get what they need and what they expect and what they believe he's capable of, they're just going to cut ties and let him go because, they've kind of had it with him. I mean, you know, he's got the ability. There's no question he's got the ability, but there's something missing there, and I think it happens off the field. I don't know if it's maturation, if he's got to be more mature, if he's just got to work harder, more consistently. Talk to a lot of people who just kind of look and shake their head about Michael. He's got a lot of talent, but, you know, he just doesn't seem to really know how to prepare himself for training camps and off-season programs and the start of a season and this, that, and the other, and certainly on a Sunday. And, he has these lapses, and it's what's, keeping him from being a real bona fide professional receiver. I mean, he's got some skill and ability, and he's got some special traits, but he's missing some of the key things that allow a guy to be a real pro in this league, and a lot of that stuff happens off the field and in terms of how you work out and prepare for a season, and until he gets that right, he's going to struggle to make a team.
How much did he dig his own grave? Because what I mean by that is, when Gruden was around, he kept blaming Gruden. It was Gruden's fault. Gruden was on his rear end. Gruden this, Gruden that. Well, Gruden's gone. And outside of the Dallas game, it's pretty much SOS with him. How much did he dig his own grave by just trying to finger Gruden as the problem?
Well, I think Gruden was part of the problem with him because John gave up on him quickly. But you know what? John will do that with guys that don't really work hard enough and don't show him what he wants to see. And I think the Bucs, bought that line and said, okay, prove to us that you were right. Prove to us that it was John. And then, and I think he did that for the most part in training camp, but then all of a sudden he gets hurt again. And then it's like, is he working smart enough? And again, it's working smart. It's not necessarily working hard. It's working smart and working hard. And, I just don't know if the Bucs feel that he worked smart enough and hard enough, even while he was injured, to get back and be the guy that they need him to be. And that's what they're looking for, is the guy that works hard and works smart.
The problem is they bought him for $10 million guaranteed when they tried to give him that shot to prove himself again.
Well, it's the same thing they did with Kellen Winslow. It's kind of a good faith type contract. It's like, here, we're showing you that we have faith in you. We're going to show you right now we believe in 100% in what you can do for us. Now you've got to deliver. Kellen Winslow did. They did the same thing with Antonio Bryant. He did it. Unfortunately, Michael Clayton didn't live up to those expectations. He didn't live completely down to them, but he's at the point now where he's going to have to show up, and he's going to have to show up ready to go and ready to be a different kind of player for this team, or else he's going to be gone.
Hey, Roy, Steve White again. And I know I might be in the minority on this, but my problem is, why not cut him now? And let me explain why I'm asking you that question. I have nothing personal against Michael Clayton, and I've heard from several different sources that he's a pretty good guy. We all know that he goes out and he goes hard, and in the running game, he'll block linebackers. He's fearless in that regard. But if you can't tell that guy is not an NFL receiver at this point, you need new eyes, not glasses. You need something more than LASIK.
Yeah,
because
I think the number one reason that he's still on this football team is because they just don't have very, very many receivers. Well, they got five now,
right.
And most of those guys are unproven. I mean, he is the most experienced and most proven receiver on the roster right now. The other thing is they did invest some money in him last year, and I think they don't want to just, let that money just go to waste. I think they want to try and get something back on their investment. And in order to do that, you give them an off-season program. You give them another training camp. You might even give them a few games. But he's a guy, as I said, if he's still on the team in training camp, good. If he's still on the team and you know, at the start of the season, then he's made another. He's passed another hurdle. If he's still on the team after the trade deadline, he's passed another hurdle, and he must be on his way back. But and giving this team what they want. But I think all three of those are big hurdles for him because the Bucks, like I said before, I think they're pretty much fed up with him. And then Steve, they see what you see. I think they know that he's a guy that's really got to deliver, and I'm not sure that they have the faith anymore that he's going to deliver.
Well, let me further expand on why don't they cut him now? Because here's my thing. We've seen Michael Clayton. Michael Clayton always is going to excite you in the offseason. He's a big kid. He usually can catch when it's just in shorts for some reason. He makes great catches in shorts. He's all one Buck Palace, you know. So he's going to show you that. I have no reason to believe that this guy isn't going to do everything that's required to go through OTAs, to go through passing camp, to go into training camp and look great. But then it's never the preseason that's the problem. It's the regular season. And my thing is, you don't have a cap this year, so you're not going to take the cap hit. Yes, you've invested money, but that money's gone anyway. And so we only have so many wide receivers, true, but why not give those guys reps who might end up actually playing for us in the fall, having to, because he's not going to be there, and cut your losses. He's not, I believe in miracles as much as the next guy, Roy, but if Michael Clayton is starting for us next year, or if he's even on the roster in the first game, hey, man, I might have to be recommitted to church. I'm just saying. I'm just being real with you.
No, I hear you, and I understand exactly what you're saying. And again, I'm speaking just on, this is just my opinion, and based on, you know, what I've heard from people inside the organization, and that's why I say that number one is because they just don't have a bunch of wideouts right now. They kind of need the body. And right. Number two is the money, and the other thing that I think is important is they really do want to see what a new receivers coach can do with this guy. Maybe he can be a miracle worker. No shot on Richard Mann because, you know, but I think that's part of the reason Richard Mann is gone. I think they kind of pressed Richard to try to get a little bit more out of some of these guys, including Maurice Stovall and maybe even Brian Clark. And, you know, sometimes there's only so much talent. You know, you don't have that much to work with. But as you said it, Steve, you know, he is a guy who's going to be all one Buck Palace, you know, in July and August. And the problem is they got to try and get him to be at least, you know, at least all NFC South in September and October. And I think that's what they're looking for. Why can't you translate it, you know, across the street onto the game day field? That's what they need to see. And they're just going to take their best shot before they give up on him, I guess.
Roy Cummings giving it his all on the JoeBucksFan.com radio network. Roy, we are incredibly appreciative. We'll talk to you again, man.
Thanks a lot, Roy.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.